ball-and-strike pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
And strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
All right, welcome back, Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast, at Mariners Pod. Thanks for being here. We have a lot to get to in this one. The Mariners lose the series against the Astros, a chance to salvage the finale today. We're going to talk about what happened in the game yesterday, including Taijuan Walker had another start cut short. So we're going to hear the skipper, we'll hear Taijuan Walker address that issue as the Mariners head into the All-Star break. One more, at least, Walker's spot in the rotation before the All-Star break comes up. So that will be talked about coming up. Edgar Martinez did something pretty special yesterday. We're going to get some eyewitness accounts of what Edgar did. Rick Riz will be here. He's going to chat with Dave Valley coming up. And All-Stars were announced. Robinson Cano is on the team. We're going to hear from him coming up in a few minutes. And also with two deserving players left off, I'm going to talk about why Mariner fans should really be disappointed. We're going to talk about that coming up in a few minutes as well. So a ton to get to as the Mariners facing the Astros in Game 2 of the three-game series, Taijuan Walker against Dallas Keuchel. Great start for the M's. They score first in the second inning. Astros bounce back with Valbuena home run, just like old times. 1-1 the score, but then Nelson Cruz slugs a long ball.
The 2-2 to Cruz, swing and a high fly ball, deep left center field, going back to the warning track, and this one is going to be over the wall for a home run over the yellow stripe in left center field. Nelson Cruz with his 22nd home run of the season above the garage doors. Number 22, and the Mariners have the lead 2-1 in this ball game.
2-1 lead, but it wouldn't last as Astros play long ball against Walker.
Swing and a drive deep into the gap in left center field, and this one is off the wall, and it is gone. Once again above that yellow stripe in left center field, A.J. Reed with an opposite field home run. Another two-run shot for the Astros here in the bottom of the fourth. Reed's second major league home run.
And that was it for the scoring. Fourth inning was it. A four spot for Houston in the bottom of the fourth. 5-2 lead at that point. And the pitching would blank the Mariners the rest of the way.
And again, the Harris 2-2 to Sean O'Malley. And here she comes. Check swing, strike three called. And the ball game is over. The Astros win it tonight. A final score of 5-2. And the Astros have won the opening two games of the three-game series here at Minute Maid Park.
So they take the first two games of the series. Walker can just go four, gives up five hits, five runs. Montgomery, excellent. He goes four out of the pen, gives up just a couple hits, no runs, one walk and two strikeouts on 50 pitches. But for Walker, the concern, the injury once again, here's what he said after the game.
Were you dealing with more of the same here, or was this different?
Yeah, I mean, same thing. Frustrating first two innings. It was good. I was able to drive. Then after the second inning, I just had no legs and everything was up. Everything was running back to the plate. Just couldn't drive it in there. It's frustrating because I don't really know what I can do to make it better yet. I'm going to find out more later this week, but you know, just trying to pitch through it. It sucks.
Well, I know you said you could pitch through it, but at some point, isn't it diminishing returns if you can't pitch the way you normally want?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I just haven't had my best stuff. You know, my velo's down. You know, changeup's not as sharp. Nothing's really as sharp. You know, it's because I can't really get into my legs and, you know, get after it. It's probably not best for me to go out there and pitch right now, maybe, just because I can't really give it, you know, 100%.
But in between work, have you been able to do your normal routine, or have you had to come back?
I couldn't do really anything. I just tried to stay off as much as possible. I mean, did a flat ground to a bullpen, and you know, just frustrating. It sucks.
On the first pitch, I mean, right away, or when you feel it right away?
Yeah, I mean, I felt it in the bullpen, but just frustrating. I don't really know what to do.
What is your body telling you right now?
about what you should do?
Rest, I guess. Rest and kind of see what's going on with it. You know, kind of see my options.
Hey, Todd, was it better last time with the 10-day rest or 9-day, whatever it was?
No.
So that little bit of rest didn't really help?
Not really, no. Yeah.
So there it was. Not encouraging sound there from Taiwan Walker, certainly. Here's what Scott Servais had to say after the game about it.
Yeah, you know, it's Taiwan obviously still isn't quite right with that foot. We're going to have that looked at again. And you know, he's struggling. He's trying to pitch through it. But we probably have to kind of reevaluate where we're at here, and have him looked at again.
What are the options? I mean, is it just a rest or is there a surgery?
I don't know. I'm not the doctor on that one. Yeah, I mean, I probably need to go see a specialist or something and see where we're headed there. That's obviously not right. He's trying to battle through it, but this is just not there.
What are you seeing there? Is he able to drive? He's having trouble driving.
Yeah, trying to, drive off that back leg. And, he's a big, strong kid, very athletic, all that other good stuff, and he's trying to get through it, but just hard for him to repeat. And then, when you're not using your legs and you have to have an extended inning, throw that many pitches, it kind of catches up with him. So, that's kind of what happened tonight.
When did he know, or did you sort of know this was kind of coming maybe in the third?
It's been sore for a while, and I think, every time he goes out there, you kind of got your fingers crossed that he can get over the hump with it. It really hasn't. He hasn't been able to feel good about, being on your legs, and this game is about, your lower half and being able to use it on the mound or in the batter's box.
Montgomery picks you up pretty good there.
Yeah, Mike threw the ball really well. I was happy to see that. He was running out of gas. Really hot in here tonight. The air conditioning went out for a while. So 97 outside and, 89 degrees inside. But he hung in there. I thought his stuff was good, used all of his pitches, and was very efficient.
Taiwan's next term is the last game before the break. I mean, can you empty out?
We don't know yet. I don't know what it will do yet. We'll have a better feel for that probably tomorrow or the next day. And right now, let's take it a day at a time. Let's just try to get tomorrow's game and try to get, some of the momentum we had at home, try to get that back going again.
How about Nelson? I mean, found the ball off there.
Yeah, he's sore. Expect he'll be in there tomorrow, but have a better feel. He's going to be a little bit sore, no doubt. He smoked the ball off top of his foot.
He said trying to get going like at home again. Were the at-bats the same, or was there a little
less? The pitching was good. Obviously, Keuchel threw the ball well. We had a few chances. And just, the home run ball got us tonight. It's not like they murdered the ball. They just hit, they hit more homers than we did. And then in big spots, those two in that inning, obviously that hurt.
Tejo doesn't have much to show for. Actually, an infield hit, but he stings it to left, stings it to right.
Yeah, his at-bats have been good. Got to give them credit. They made plays. They got the big outs in the game, and, we just couldn't get through it there in the fourth inning.
Nelly doesn't make the All-Star team with 22 homers this season.
Yeah, it's disappointing, and then I did talk to him. I think he's certainly deserving of it. Has carried our team for a number of stretches in the first half, and I really appreciate his work ethic and how he goes about his business, because he does play on days when he doesn't feel 100%, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about All-Stars in just a second. First, though, Mariners will try and bounce back and take the series, take a game in the series, salvage a game coming up tonight. 5:10 first pitch. Wade LeBlanc, who's been excellent in his first two starts, and the Mariners could use that again, will take on Fires. Fires 6-3, 4-1-2 ERA. LeBlanc 1-0. With a 1.50. The Mariners now 43-41. The Astros 45-39. So it'd be great for the M's if they could take the finale of this series and then move on to KC before the All-Star break is here. Now, we'll get to Edgar Martinez in just a second, but first things first, All-Star teams announced, and I don't think this surprises anyone. Robinson Cano, his stellar first half. He makes the All-Star team. Here's what he had to say about it.
Be a little extra. I mean, you didn't go last year. Be a little more to get back there.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's one of the power of the big receiver that you want to be. I mean, that's a memory that, everyone is always excited. And for me, it's been a lot more because this year I'm going to be able to bring my son, and he's going to be able to, enjoy that. And I think it's going to be a great moment just me and my son there.
A little more. I mean, last year was a disappointment, and you got here on merit. I mean, you deserve to go. You put up the numbers.
Yeah. Thanks God that we found out what we have, what I have, and what I was able to play through and able to get a save. And, you know, it was a lot of hard work because I had to stay in Philly for over a month and prepare myself to do those exercises so I can be ready for spring training. And, you know, when I get to spring training, I tell that guy, I mean, let's go back to the same thing we started last year, and then we went from the beginning doing everything in the cage. And, you know, that's one thing that, you know, I told him earlier, I mean, you're part of that. I mean, be able to come the first, you know, first of the morning, be able to have the kind of season that I haven't, in my career. And, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Edgar, too.
So did the outside stuff motivate you, too? The outside off-season stuff, you know, some of the comments and stuff, that motivate you, or is it just you wanted to prove to yourself as well?
Well, I mean, I would have said I don't have anything to prove myself. I mean, you know, everybody knows that I was hurt. So sometimes the comment is bothered because, you know, there's people that they don't even know how, they don't care if you're hurt or not. They just, do you think you're a machine? You got to go out there every day because you get paid a lot of money. You got to go out there and perform it every day. I mean, we don't want to do that. I wish every time I go, I hit home, man. You know, I would like to retire. I mean, you know, I'm the guy with the most home run ever, but it's not going to happen, so that's not who I am. But, you know, as a player, I give everything I got. I mean, people take for granted that, you know, they don't realize how hard I work and how I prepare myself and be out there playing every day. And, you know, even when I got in New York, a lot of people got criticized that I was lazy and whatever. And but I know how I work and how I prepare myself. I don't think if you're a lazy guy, you won't be able to play in a cell for that many games every year.
A couple of your guys, teammates, didn't make it. I mean, are you disappointed that maybe Nelly or Kyle isn't there with you?
Well, they both got a number to go. I mean, but that's something that, you know, it's out of my hands. Mm-hmm. So, but it's not over yet. I mean, we got, what, another week?
People get
hurt. You know, it will hurt. You get the last boat, and, you know, I hope they make it. I mean, it would be fun, and it's always good to have a teammate there.
So that is Robinson Cano, certainly well-deserving, 302. 19 homers, 54 ribbies, a .357 on base percentage, slugging .532. Has been one of the best in the American League, no question about it. Won't be starting at second. Jose Altuve, the starter, is having an MVP-type season. He has been incredible, but Cano makes second base. I mean, between Altuve and Cano, they really locked down second base. Pretty deep position this year. Some other guys that are having nice seasons that are just out of the mix, didn't make the team, whether it's Pedroia or Kinsler or Dozier. I mean, just go down the list of second basemen. And those two have hogged the spots, Altuve and Cano, making the All-Star team. Now, this is always a difficult conversation when you talk about other guys. And Nelson Cruz and Kyle Seager both having All-Star quality seasons in the first half. And there's a number of guys who have had All-Star quality first halves, but have not made the All-Star team. And it's difficult. It's always a difficult conversation because the easy part of the conversation is to say, well, he should have made the All-Star team or he should have made the All-Star team. The difficult part, though, is to say who shouldn't have made the All-Star team when you look at it just in kind of practical circumstances. Because the reality is it's not always the best guys having the best first halves that make the All-Star team, the best numbers or the best players, because there's a couple different realities that kind of tweak the All-Star rosters. And one of those realities is a player needs to be a representative from every single team. So that's something that has to be considered. And also kind of the home field advantage factor thrown in. So you can see managers kind of subtly tweak the rosters to help in an actual game situation. And what I mean by that, you look at the American League and you can see that there's an extra bullpen arm for the American League and there's three catchers for the American League. Now, if you compare Matt Wieter's first half compared to Nelson Cruz's first half, well, it's not that close. Nelson Cruz has had a much better first half numbers-wise than Matt Wieter's has had, but there's three catchers on the American League roster. And part of the reason is you get late in a ball game, need a pinch run, you need a pinch hit. Three catchers is a valuable thing to have. So Vogt, who's also the only A's representative, is on the roster. Wieters is on the roster as well. You add an extra bullpen arm. So right there, that's two potential position player slots that are off the board because of some roster realities.
makes it a real crunch when you look at it. So Nelson Cruz, did he have a deserving first half? He sure did. So did George Springer. So did Michael Saunders, other guys in the outfield mix. Saunders and Springer made the final vote in the American League. Nelson Cruz did not. I think the biggest disappointment, though, for the Mariners, for Mariner fans, and obviously you can be disappointed in Nelson Cruz not making the All-Star team, but when you look at the final vote, Evan Longoria made the final vote for Tampa Bay. And Longoria is having a nice bounce-back season. I'm not taking anything away from what he's done this year. An All-Star from 2008 to 2010. Has struggled the last couple of years for him in comparison to what he did early in his career. But having a solid bounce-back season, but no matter how you slice the numbers, Kyle Seager's having a much better season than Evan Longoria. Maybe much is stronger, but maybe too strong. But I don't think there's any question, no matter how you kind of tilt the numbers or look at the numbers or slice the numbers, Kyle Seager is having a better season than Evan Longoria and is more deserving to be in the final vote mix than Longoria. And if anyone objects to that, I'm willing to have this debate, so feel free to tweet me at any point at Gary Hill Jr. But these conversations I always find interesting and fun. But I mean, if you look at Longoria and Seager side by side, Seager's played two more games this year. He has scored five more runs, has one more double, two less home runs, nine more RBIs. I think this is where it really comes down for me. Both have the same batting average, 277, but the real difference maker offensively, Kyle Seager has drawn 12 more walks this year, and Longoria has struck out 25 more times, which I think is pretty significant. So the reality is they both have the same batting averages at 277, but Seager a 360 on base percentage compared to 329 on base percentage for Longoria. Seager slugging higher, 519 to 517. Seager's OPS 879 to 846 for Evan Longoria. I mean, it's not real close when you start to dial back the numbers. I mean, Longoria really only has him. He has two more hits, and he's got two more home runs. But every other number you look at, Seager has the advantage, and that's offense. You start to look at defense, and there's a lot of different ways you can look at this too, but let's just take defensive runs saved for at least a comparison sake. And if you look at that, Adrian Beltre actually leads for American League third baseman by a lot. He probably hasn't had the offensive numbers with the time missed to be included in the conversation. Josh Donaldson, Chase Headley, Kyle Seager all tied right behind Adrian Beltre. And in fact, Longoria is a minus in terms of defensive runs saved. Kyle Seager's well in the plus with five, tied with Donaldson and Headley in the American League. So Seager is having a much better year defensively than Longoria as well. And what's going to be tough is when you start, there will be some guys added, maybe Cruz, maybe Seager get added, but it's more likely that the final vote guys will get the nod first, and that's where that kind of stings if Longoria were to get the call over Seager, because Seager's well-deserving. In fact, if you look at Baseball Reference WAR, Seager's among the leaders in the American League. In fact, Cano is at 3.6 coming into yesterday, and Seager's at 3.5. So he's tied for seventh with Ian Desmond, who's an all-star, having a great year. David Ortiz, an all-star as well. And George Springer, who's in the mix. So that's, to me, where the disappointment really lies. Kyle Seager, I think, should be included over Evan Longoria. And part of that, it's an easier conversation to have because it's a one-for-one. It's not you're trying to argue out of the third catcher or another situation like that. You can have the argument to, I think, Michael Saunders, George Springer, Nelson Cruz. I mean, that's a debate to have as well, but it's a little bit closer to me than the Seager-Longoria debate is. So there it is, my two cents on the All-Star team. Feel free to – I'd like to get your thoughts too, so you can send them my way at Gary Hill Jr. or GaryHillPXP@gmail.com. I mean, who knows? By next week, this conversation could be moot, but – We'll see. So Edgar Martinez did something pretty amazing yesterday. If you haven't heard, you probably have because it was everywhere. Edgar Martinez jumped into the cage yesterday for the M's and was stroking line drives and then just demolished a baseball. Demolished a baseball in the batting cage. And to hear the descriptions of what happened is really fun. First of all, here's what the skipper said about Edgar going deep, who was actually throwing BP, which was pretty awesome.
Skip, you had a little fun before the ball game this afternoon. You were throwing some BP to some of your coaches, and Edgar Martinez hits one out of here way out to left field, up by the tracks, hit that community leader sign. It made a lot of noise. Guy could still swing the bat, can he?
Yeah, he can. Just the fans know we're out working with our players today, but we had a little extra time, and Edgar was behind the cage. I said, hey, Edgar, you want to take a couple? So he quickly got batting gloves on and stepped in there, and he hadn't missed a beat. It's the same setup and stance. And, you know, once he had a couple rounds to get loose, he wanted to get five more. So he hit one out, and it's fun. You know, he's having a little fun with it, and, of course, the players are hooting and hollering. Yeah. So it was a good time.
So here's what O'Malley had to say about watching Edgar.
Sean, as a kid, you remember Edgar Martinez growing up, hitting star for the Mariners for many, many years, guy that should be in the Hall of Fame, and hopefully one day will. You had a chance to watch him take some early BP this afternoon here at Minute Maid Park. What did you see out of Edgar Martinez?
Some things just never change, you know. Edgar, he's still got it. I mean, you know, he started off hitting, you know, routine line drives right over the second baseman's head, and then, you know, by the end of it, he was hitting – launching home runs to left field. So, you know, for me to see that in person was awesome.
How impressive was that? It went way up there by the tracks, didn't it?
It went way up there. It hit the sign just below the tracks. And, I mean, I don't think I can even get one up there, let alone here he is. He hasn't played in a long time, and he's still doing it. So it was impressive.
What was it like for you to watch that, you know, knowing, you know, watching Edgar as a kid all those years?
I mean, I just sat back and I took it all in. I literally sat there and was like, man, watching Edgar Martinez take batting practice right now. And, you know, I actually try to take something away from him. You know, he's just so relaxed and so comfortable. And it was amazing how focused he still was, even though he was just kind of screwing around.
So that was O'Malley. Now, Shannon Dreher caught up with Daniel Robertson, who was just called up. And here I'm going to play the whole conversation. And at the very end, he's got some really great thoughts on what he saw with Edgar Martinez.
Daniel Robertson up here today, and not only are you here, you are in the lineup. We got a good look at you in spring training. Obviously, a lot of versatility, you know, good in the outfield speed. That was a lot of fun to see as well. But when we talked to the manager, the first thing out of his mouth was, well, he's faced Dallas Keuchel before.
That's true. You know, I came up through the minor leagues with him. So I think the very first time I faced him was in 2010. And so it's a good feel, and it's also cool to see, you know, some of the guys that you started your journey with having success at the big league level. And he's, you know, everything that he presents now is everything that he had in 2010, but it wasn't in Houston, it wasn't on a big stage, it wasn't in the AL West. So I'm very familiar with him, and I look forward to facing him again.
We saw this team come together in spring training. You were very much a part of that. It wasn't 25 guys, it was a good 50 guys that really came together. How important was that?
It's extremely important because at the end of the day, you know, it takes a collective group to make it to the World Series. I mean, because this game is going to decide who steps up. It's not going to be anybody's within control. It's all, the baseball's always in control. So they're going to decide who steps up, and it's our job to be prepared. So when we move into the lineup, we have to make sure that we're 100% bought in and we're all in, because if not, then instead of being a strength in the chain, we're just going to be one of the weak ones in the chain.
You had a great quote with the media a couple of minutes ago. You said when you were asked, hey, what do you try and bring to the team? And you said, I try to bring a baseball player wherever I go. Explain that a little.
You know, it was something that I learned from Dave Roberts. You know, the manager of obviously the Dodgers now, but being a young player, when he was kind of a special assistant, Rover, and I used to come over in spring training games, and we used to have conversations, and it was really important that he wanted me to understand that it's not about playing baseball, it's not about being an outfielder, it's not about being an infielder if you're a versatile player. It's about being a baseball player, and a baseball player is asked to bunt, he's asked to steal, he's asked to move a runner over, he's asked to get a runner in. You know, what are you going to do with the infield back? And there's a runner at third, and they're giving it to you. A simple ground ball does the job. And he just stressed all those important things about base running, because all those things that a baseball player can bring is something that can help win a ballgame.
It's a great story. I mean, you guys just have influence of guys all over the league. You know, you go that far back, and we saw Dave Roberts play, climb, and now he's the manager.
And absolutely. And, I mean, and his story is special to me because he didn't make his debut till he was 28, and it's very similar to eerie similar to me and the way my journey started in this game. And so he spent 10 years in the major leagues, and now he's still very much in it. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is going to be my life's work. So I want to make sure that I'm doing it the right way and learning from the people who gave up their life to this sport just as well.
Lastly, I hope I heard this right. I think you were out on the field when Edgar took a round of batting practice
today. Of course.
What was
it like
to see that?
If you want my honest opinion, it was weird because I was an 11-year-old kid. I grew up a Mariner fan, very huge. I vividly remember and still get emotional. I'll get goosebumps talking about the ball he hit down the line and Junior scoring. Watching him take batting practice, once he got loose, it looked the exact same, but with who he is now, if that makes sense. You know, as his experience in life has gotten a little bit longer than all of ours, it was the same player. He was hitting line drives up the middle. He hit a ball into the Crawford box. I mean, hit it off the thing. It didn't just go in the Crawford box. It went off the back wall. And it was the exact same person. And it was like, you're watching, his swing didn't change. I don't know how much he swings nowadays, or if ever in off seasons. And he steps in the cage and 12 balls in, next thing you know, he looks like Edgar Martinez chasing a batting title. That's what it looked like. That was what it looked like.
Just a little bonus on your first day. Why not?
Yeah, he's hitting 390 right now and he's working on his batting title. Oh, wait, just kidding. I retired and I'm going to be a Hall of Famer. Here, kid, keep working up the middle. Here's your bat back.
And with that, I think we'll end this. Daniel, thank you. It's good to see you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
And finally, we're going to hand things over to Rick Riz and Dave Valley. They're going to talk some catching.
Chance to sit down and talk some catching with a good friend of ours, Dave Valley. Dave, you did a great job behind home plate for many years with the Mariners. Now you're on pre- and post-game shows with Root Sports. The Major League Baseball Network, of course, worked with us for many years on radio and television. Let's talk catching. We saw a few nights ago a pitcher by the name of Wade LeBlanc have a really good changeup, and he used that changeup working with Chris Iannetta. You worked with a lot of guys that had a great changeup. They could read swings, knowing when to throw that pitch. What do you do as a catcher when you're looking at swings from opposing hitters, knowing when to use that changeup and when to back off a little bit more with that pitch?
Well, there's a lot that goes into it, Rick, and it has to do with each and every hitter that are so individual that you have to understand what type of hitters they are, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and then also you combine that and kind of throw it into the mix of the guy that's on the mound for me. What are his strengths and weaknesses, and how am I going to find those little wedges where I can get him to use his maybe his secondary pitch to get a strike, but then also set it up for his best pitch to get that out. So when you look at a Wade LeBlanc, throws high 80s is his fastball, which nowadays is not very hard. But he's got the good separation between the velocity of the fastball and the changeup. The thing that he has done in these last two starts that he's had for the Mariners, he has had pinpoint control with the fastball. Now, when I have a lefty, a soft-throwing lefty who has pinpoint control, and I know his best pitch, his out pitch, is that changeup, I'm going to throw that fastball all around the strike zone. I'm going to throw it up high. I want to throw it on the outside corner. I want to throw it in off of the plate to make that hitter start to recognize that, oh, he'll come inside. Even though he doesn't throw hard, most guys automatically think, well, he's going to keep everything away because he can't throw that fastball inside because it's only 87, 88 miles an hour. But you still have to throw it there to keep that hitter kind of honest by not being able to dive out over there. And then what really comes into play is as you watch a Major League Baseball game, and as all the folks out there that are watching, watch the hitter swing. How did they react to the fastball? How did they react to the breaking ball? How did they react to that changeup? Because I always felt that the swing before told me what the next pitch to throw was.
Dave, we watch you guys behind home plate, and one's a fastball, two's a curveball, three's a slider, four with the wiggly fingers is a changeup. You know, you go over the game plan. You know, there's a method to each pitch that you want that pitcher to throw. How do you decide one, two, three, four?
Number one, I want to throw a strike, first pitch. That's ultimate goal for me, is for my pitcher to work ahead. So what is he throwing that night? that he can throw for his strike. So hopefully it's his fastball, because I still believe the best pitch in baseball is a well-placed fastball. So the things that would change that is if I have, say, a guy like Paul Molitor, who's now the manager of the Minnesota Twins, a notorious first ball fastball hitter. So I know Molly was looking for that fastball. If I was going to throw a fastball, it had to be an excellent placed fastball. So if my pitcher's struggling with the fastball, I'm probably not going to throw Molly a first pitch fastball if I feel like he might make a mistake over the middle part of the plate, because that's how Molly got into the Hall of Fame, taking advantage of pitcher's mistakes. So again, the type of hitter and who that hitter is, knowing that hitter, all of the different at-bats that you've had in your brain of how that hitter responded to certain pitches, it all kind of goes into your mental computer in your brain,
yeah.
And it spits out fastball, or it spits out slider, or it spits out curveball in the dirt when guys get two strikes. I there was a couple of pitches I liked with two strikes. A curveball, a breaking ball on the plate, bouncing it. Actually, I like three. I like the changeup thrown on the plate. So when it's over the cylinder, as a hitter, you're looking for something over the cylinder. A changeup, because of the deception, as soon as I recognize it's over the cylinder, my brain still says swing. Yeah. And you'll get a lot of guys swing at a changeup that's down in the dirt, that's on the plate, that's a chase pitch. I like that. And the other one, and I go back to using it with Mark Langston. When Mark was in 1984 as the rookie pitcher of the year for the Seattle Mariners, he loved to throw that fastball right across the top of the zone. We saw Taiwan Walker do it really successfully in his last start. A lot of fastballs. Ty's got that 97-mile-an-hour right across the letters. Almost impossible for a guy to catch up to that. It looks so good as a hitter, but Ty got a lot of easy pop-ups the other night. So those are the three pitches with two strikes I like to have in your back pocket. Not every pitcher has those pitches, yeah. But hopefully they have one that we could use to get him through that night and get a win in his pocket.
Whole lot of thinking going on for the catcher behind home plate, working with that pitcher. Whole lot of thinking before the game starts with a game plan, and hopefully things work out so you can execute that game plan.
I'm already tired right now thinking of all this. So you just imagine the catchers that are doing it every single night all the way through for 8 months. It takes a lot of mental energy and also physical energy to do the job correctly behind the dish.
David, you did it very, very well for many years. Thanks a lot for being our guest here on Rick's Tips.
My pleasure, my man.
See you later!